Greetings, geeks, and welcome to our Summer Blockbusters podcast series. I'm Regina McMenemy, the lead ambassador for the Geek Embassy.
And I'm Rhonda Oglesby, the wildcard ambassador.
This is episode 161, recorded on June 28, 2016. For this podcast season, we are watching blockbuster summer movies. Each month, now through August, we will select a new movie to see and then analyze, celebrate, and critique. Usually, we coordinate and see the same movies, but this month we decided to spice it up and see two completely different summer films.
What?
Right?
Crazy.
Yeah, we're gonna shake it up a little. I know, right? So Rhonda saw Central Intelligence, and I watched Free State of Jones.
We'll close with a couple of streaming recommendations for that summer vacation downtime.
So I went to see Free State of Jones the day it opened.
Oh, gee, wow.
I know, right? But it was June 24th, which just happens to be my birthday.
It's my birthday, I'm just saying.
So, you know, it was my birthday and decided to go to the movies. And let's see, the choices I had were Central Intelligence, the Independence Day.
No,
I was not seeing that. Finding Dory.
Oh.
Which I thought about seeing, but I have a feeling, as I have a small toddler, the repetition of Pixar movies is not far in my future. So seeing one on my birthday didn't really kind of fit.
No. Adult movie.
Adult movie, yeah. So we went and kind of researched, and I did look at the trailer for the Independence Day, and I was just like, I've never had quite such a lackluster response to a trailer before. There was Warcraft as well, and we were talking about doing Warcraft for the show. Mm-hmm. But I had promised my best friend that I'd go see it with her, so we were going to go see it. Anyway, long story short, we didn't make it to Warcraft, which is fine. So Free State of Jones was the kind of default winner. It was awesome, though, because I saw it in a parlor theater that they have at our local night theater. Called Cinetopia. Yeah, super, super fancy. Not a terribly large screen, but a really nice, really comfortable theater, you know, really kickback. It's essentially like sitting on a couch.
Yeah.
Pillows and stuff. It was, you know, it was nice. And got, local brewery had some beer with it. Heathen Brewery, which is here local to where I live. And I had a tropical IPA with citrus flavors. Mm. It was delicious.
Wow, good.
So, yeah, which helped me with the violence in the beginning of the movie.
Heathen, sponsor us.
Yes, yes, exactly, Heathen. They just followed me on Twitter, so maybe they will. So this is I'm going to read the description from IMDb because it's kind of a complicated film, it was a long film and had a lot of different kind of components to it. So here you go.
Okay.
Set during the Civil War, Free State of Jones tells the story of defiant Southern farmer Newt Knight and his extraordinary armed rebellion against the Confederacy. Banding together with other small farmers and local slaves, Knight launched an uprising that led Jones County, Mississippi, to secede from the Confederacy, creating a Free State of Jones. Knight continued his struggle into Reconstruction, distinguishing himself as a compelling, if controversial, figure of defiance long before the war.
There you go. Historical drama.
I saw historical drama. Yes, actually, it was really funny because so it starts in mid-action in a Civil War battle, and Knight is a medic, and he's got body slung over his shoulder, and I don't know, some violent, bloody stuff happens. None of which I watched. I actually put my head up in front of my face and leaned on Chris, and I said, why did I agree to see this movie on my birthday?
Yeah.
He was a little rough.
Yeah.
So that was, it was a little bloody. And then it kind of evolves from there, and he has a nephew who shows up in his troop who came looking for him, who couldn't have been more than, you know, 14. Who ends up, of course, not making it, and he deserts so he can take his body home to his family, essentially. And that's the start of the movie. And it's based on true events. So this isn't a fiction. It's actually based on, like, historical events that happened.
Yeah. So what was your conclusion?
I enjoyed it. It was surprising for me. I wasn't, you know, thinking of it for our summer blockbuster thing, so I wasn't watching it with that kind of in mind. So I had to kind of go back and think a little bit more about it after I had seen it, which gives me a little more perspective on it. It was a really interesting movie to have it be a summer release. And when I watched the trailer, I was led through the trailer, because, you know, they can be a little deceptive, to believe it was going to be a very action-oriented film,
yeah.
That there's lots of fighting and lots of war. And there's not at all, really.
Yeah.
There's two sort of major fights, maybe three. There's a lot of little fights. There's a lot of fighting, you know, that's kind of going on the side where Newton Knight is leading, you know, small groups of people against essentially looters from the Confederate Army who are coming and taking essentially everything that was on anybody's farm to feed the army, and leaving, you know, the women and children with nothing. So that was kind of, there's lots of little fights kind of like that. And he runs off into exile and ends up fighting in that. So it was different than, I guess, I anticipated a summer movie to be, which was interesting. So I started to think about, why would they put this as a summer movie? And then I thought, well, they cut the trailer to make it look like it was an action film. I think to get more people to kind of go see it. And I don't know if it would have gone up against kind of the heavy hitters for Oscar consideration, if it would have done really well. But it's more an Oscar-type film than it was a summer blockbuster.
Okay.
So I think that was part of the manipulation of its placement and its time opening in summer.
Yeah.
I love Matthew McConaughey. All right, all right, all right.
Don't. I will never leave him. Poor guy.
It will never leave him, poor guy. I really do. I do enjoy him, and I like when he does these kind of funky, weird characters, and that's kind of what Newton was.
Mm-hmm.
I had some problems with the story, which I can't, and it's this weird thing that they did where I'll put a small spoilers warning in here. I won't try to give too much of it away, but it is historical and happened several hundred years ago, so I guess it's not, do you spoil movies like that? That's actually a pretty profound question. Can you spoil
100
historical dramas?
I love that question. That's fantastic.
I'm going to put that in the write-up for this one. So he gets involved with a black woman slave, and they end up having a child together. And so it flashes back and forth between a court case that great-grandson is facing, because he married a white woman and he presents as white, but then it was discovered that he was, you know, descendant of slaves. So he was whatever the percentage was at the time. Couldn't have a marriage to a white woman. So it's flashing back and forth between these, and there's no introduction to that. Just all of a sudden you're in, you know,
that's weird.
1960s clothes, 1950s, 1960s clothes from the Civil War, and in a courtroom, and there's no, and that wasn't teased in the teaser at all. So that it, I don't know. There were some things that were just kind of about the story that were kind of off.
Yeah.
I said, they didn't explain certain things, like his first wife just took off when the fighting started and just left. And he just doesn't even make any, you know, notice about the fact that his wife and his infant son have left. And I was just kind of like, shouldn't he even, like, mentioned, oh, you know, I need to make sure I find my wife again, or I need to make sure I find my son. Just some sort of acknowledgement of it. But there wasn't. She was just gone. And she ends up coming back, and they end up all living together on the same farm.
Okay,
yeah. It was just, there were some things that were really bizarre. And in addition to that, like, he does a good job as this kind of, this character who doesn't set out to lead this rebellion, but just kind of stumbles into it and feels a moral responsibility, at least that's how the, you know, story paints him, to help the freedmen after the Reconstruction and, you know, help them sort of fight this fight, which is ironic, of course, because he was in the Confederacy.
Yeah.
I felt like they could have positioned the other secondary characters a little bit better to tell that story with more depth, because it really just looks like he's kind of running off as this, you know, white guy saving everybody he can save. Yeah, so.
And you said you thought it was a little long.
It was a little long, yeah. I think, I'm not really sure. My guess, and like I said, there were holes in the narrative, too many big holes in the narrative. So my guess is this was an extreme edit.
Yeah.
That they probably cut it down, and it did kind of, there were some times where it kind of ran a little slow. I tend to give Southern movies a little bit of leeway with that, because I feel like Southern culture moves more slowly. So I feel like it's kind of a thing that kind of happens in those movies because of the way the stories are told and because of the culture it's coming out of. But it did have moments where I was like, okay, come on, we need to get on with some more action here. And a little too much reliance on exposition. Like I said, that whole idea of mixing the court case with the Civil War stuff and having no kind of like merging of them. I mean, I didn't even know how you would merge it. It was just.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounded like they had a whole lot of ideas and didn't know how to properly edit make a compelling story or a compelling drama or whatever.
Right. And I think they gave so much screen time to McConaughey that.
Oh, boy.
That it killed what could have been better narrative. Like, if they could have cut, you know, a little bit of his, you know, broodingness, they could have sped the movie up. They could have explained some of the events that happened, so it didn't look like him just kind of running through, you know, the wilds of the South trying to, you know, Mississippi trying to save everybody.
Yeah, I really hate when factors like that, either star power or other influences outside of the story change it. Because, I think that happened with the Terminator movie when Christian Bale was going to play John Connor.
Mm-hmm.
And this is strictly rumor. I know I'm saying rumor, but apparently he wanted to play John Connor and he wanted the role beefed up. Now, what I do know for a fact is that I believe the film is called The Devil's Hand that Jim was in, our friend Jim McKinney.
Right, yeah. That's why that's familiar, and that's why that's familiar.
Yeah. I mean, it's got a couple of decent stars in it, and it's got a bunch of young, up-and-coming female stars. And apparently the film originally was pretty graphic, but these female stars got some bigger roles, and they chopped the heck out of that Devil's Hand and took it down to a PG-13. And basically just ruined it.
Yeah, it's amazing what you can do with the editing of a movie.
Yeah.
And I thought for this being a historical drama, it's a really powerful thing to see how the actions of Newton Knight impacted, you know, the civil rights movement, essentially, like to connect those so strong together. But because there was no introduction of the characters in the civil rights era, it was just, let's throw these people in here. Like, I didn't care anything about those characters.
Oh, yeah.
Because there was no story built up to it. And they tried to kind of do that at the end where they show the couple and, you know, talking about it and they're telling them they need to have an annulment and he refuses at the end and gets arrested.
Yeah.
You know, it just, it could have been done. It could have been very powerful. And that connection could have been really strong and meaningful. And unfortunately, the editing and the narration for it just didn't carry it out.
Yeah. Well, what do you think in general of the genre? Do you like historical dramas? Is that out of the norm for you?
It's definitely out of the norm for me. It's not something that I think I generally gravitate toward. I don't dislike them. I usually gravitate toward ones that I have more of a connection to the story of, or the era. And I definitely didn't with that. And I think, like I said, my expectation was that it was going to be more of an action film. And it wasn't that I disliked it, but it definitely didn't hold for what I was kind of thought, more of what I thought I was getting into.
Yeah.
Which, in all honesty, once I saw the action scenes, I mean, it was funny because Chris and I were talking and he was like, well, that scene where, you know, the guy's face got blown off. And I'm like, no, I absolutely don't know that. He's like, oh, right. I think that's when you had your hands up in front of your face and were leaning on my shoulder. I'm like, yeah, I think that's when that was happening. So for that, it was definitely not really what I expected.
Well,
but I'm glad because I like to stretch myself sometimes. I don't think that's a bad thing.
Oh, no. I think especially in cases like this when it's supposed to be the depiction of a particular person and a particular set of events, and it's supposed to be retelling a moment in history, I absolutely do not watch those movies.
Yeah.
I don't. I just, the movies are made to make money.
Right.
And
they're not for history, and they're not for historical accuracy, and it all has its own perspective on the story it's telling, which, you know, it's not a history book. So, you know, I had a student in my film as art class write a paper wanting to argue that any historical drama needed to be historically accurate. And I'm like, no,
it doesn't. That's the wrong medium.
Yeah, it's not. If it's a documentary, yes, it needs to be historically accurate. A movie based on historical events is still a fiction.
Yeah. Good.
You know, and it's, you know, that's what it is. And I can enjoy them. Like, I enjoyed it. I didn't have a bad time watching it. Mind you, I didn't watch the bloody scenes, but, you know, and that wasn't very much. I thought there was going to be a lot more of it, actually, because, like I said, my anticipation was that there was going to be a lot more action to it, and there was a lot more thought and a lot more debate. And once I kind of put my mind to why would the trailer look that way and why would the movie be this way, and you really kind of get that idea that McConaughey is in that position where if he's going to go for Oscar, that's where he should be headed now.
Yeah.
And so I think after they filmed this, they realized it wasn't going to have the punch for that it needed, and that's why it got released on my birthday.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm surprised that he didn't win for the Dallas Buyers Club, because I know that they raved quite a bit about his performance in that.
Yeah.
And just like you said, he never shies away from extreme roles.
He doesn't, and that's one of the things I really love about him and his willingness just to kind of jump in. You never doubt his commitment. Like, you don't read him on the screen and go, he really wasn't into this. Like, he just goes whole hog into everything he does.
Well, there it is, really super big. He did. He won Best Performance by an Actor in a Leading Role.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, well.
Yeah, I thought so. Okay.
Okay. I'm glad that you knew that better than I did, because that's all I could kind of position it with when I was thinking about it, and obviously didn't do anything.
Yeah, well, you're still not far off base, though, because he is a bankable star.
Right.
And so they're gonna put him out there. And he's even more bankable because of, number one, he is still considered a sex object.
Yeah.
And number two, he's an Oscar winner.
Right. Yeah. And he is, he's so diverse in what kinds of roles he can do and what kinds of personas he can project. And I think that's, you know, I still stand by that they wanted it for Oscar season and weren't able to deliver it.
I want to find that other movie he did with Sarah Jessica Parker. Failure to Launch.
Oh, yeah.
Did you ever see that?
I didn't see that one.
You know, it is,
look it up.
Talking about misleading trailers,
mm-hmm.
That was advertised strictly as a comedy.
Yeah.
It was just this slapstick romantic comedy. It ended up having an intensely serious emotional ending, and it really surprised me. The basis and the thread for the whole story. And I think they did it really well. They didn't just kind of slap you at the end and make you feel bad about laughing through the entire thing. But right. there was a reason for everything the way that it was happening. And I felt like that they did a really good job wrapping it all together.
That's nice, because that doesn't often happen.
Mm-mm, no.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't a great movie, but he's funny and she's tolerable. And Terry Bradshaw's in the movie, which is just awesome, and because he's hilarious. Terry Bradshaw actually has good comic timing.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think who played Terry Bradshaw's wife. Mm-hmm. Zoe Deschanel is in that. Her role is hilarious.
Oh, I'll have to check that out.
Yeah.
I think I remember you talking about it in another episode, actually. Maybe closer to when it came out.
Kathy Bates plays Terry Bradshaw's wife, who is Tripp's mom. So it's got a great cast in it, and it's a different role for Zoe Deschanel. And
cool.
It's a fun renter, I think. A sleeper, too.
Yeah. Well, speaking of potential renters.
Okay. I am been very, very much in the mood for comedies lately. Comedies are hard to write. They're very, very hard to do. I notice a lot of times when people recommend fiction to me and they say it's a comedy, it is extremely difficult to write a comedic book. Very difficult.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the things I love about Christopher Moore.
Yes.
He just has such a talent for actually making you laugh out loud while you're reading.
I know.
Which is so rare. It's so rare.
I'm reading Christopher Moore right now.
Are you really?
Yeah, I'm in the mood for a comedy. And I was like,
right.
This is what I feel like doing. I don't feel like reading anymore, you know, heavily involved sci-fi. I don't feel like reading a murder mystery, all of which I love. So
an excellent palate cleanser.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm reading Bloodsucking Fiends.
Oh, my favorite.
I never read it, believe it or not. Of all.
Oh, God, I love her so much. Yeah.
So anyway, the trailer really, really shockingly for Central Intelligence appealed to me. Now, there's a couple of reasons. I really like Dwayne Johnson for whatever reason. He is he's a pretty all around decent entertainer.
Mm-hmm.
And Kevin Hart is very much the upcoming hot comedian right now.
Yeah.
He is hilarious. Anything that he does, he looks extremely comfortable and natural in his comedic talent. And it just comes off flawlessly.
You feel his conviction, too. Like
completely.
He's just there. Yeah.
He just completely sells it. And the juxtaposition I thought was really smart. And the trailer looked like it had decent laughs in it. And I was like, you know, this is what I'm in the mood for. The final thing that sold it is my husband actually said he wanted to see it. So that was shocking. I was like, okay, let's go. Don't have to wait.
Right.
We had a really great time.
Awesome.
Their chemistry was really great. Kevin Hart was flawless. I think Dwayne Johnson in his opening scene with Kevin Hart, opening scene's not clear, but because they jump from a time period. They start off, Kevin Hart and Dwayne Johnson are in high school. Kevin Hart plays Calvin, who is the all-star. He's the all-star athlete, class president, most likely to succeed. And if you've seen the trailers, Dwayne Johnson plays Robbie Weirdick, who is an extremely obese kid. And even though it continues to portray that he's very secure with himself, secure with who he is, everybody can be bullied, even when you have security. So it opens with a scene of extreme humiliation for poor Robbie Weirdit. And Calvin comes to his rescue. Nobody else does, no adults, no one. But Calvin expresses one small act of kindness, and Robbie never forgets it. So 20 years later, Calvin is an accountant, and just by weird chance, of course, Facebook is the blame for all evil things. Bob Stone asks Calvin to be his friend. Well, Bob Stone turns out to be Robbie Weirdick, who's changed his name, and they hook up. And now he is not the fat kid, but he's Dwayne Johnson.
Right.
The guy who can beat up anybody.
Right.
Through a situational comedy that follows, it turns out that Dwayne Johnson works for the CIA. And for the rest of the story, Calvin is caught up in the antics and drama that's following around Bob Stone. And along with the relationship, the weird relationship that Bob still feels for Calvin, he still sees Calvin as his hero. Mm-hmm. And he still sees Calvin as that guy who rescued him all those years ago. The awkward thing I felt like in the opening scene with Dwayne Johnson and Kevin Hart, where they meet as adults, is you're not quite sure what role Dwayne Johnson is playing. He's wearing a fanny pack. He has on a unicorn t-shirt, and he's just real goofy and silly. And you're like, okay, is he playing a character for Calvin because he's this real serious actual CIA agent? Or is he still the same high school kid that's a goofball that likes to dance and sing and likes unicorns? But I think Dwayne Johnson has a hard time selling it in that scene, and it's not completely his fault. I mean, the guy is a giant.
Right, yeah.
And when you look at him, you are really going to have to sell that unicorn t-shirt.
Yeah.
I'm not wearing this ironically. Ironically,
right.
I like unicorns.
Right.
And it was awkward at that point. Now, later, it still is confusing, but it's more in the way, to me, confusing in that they're supposed to make you confused. You don't know whether or not he is really the bad guy. You don't know whether or not he really is Calvin's best friend. You have no idea. And so you're constantly trying to help Calvin out by deciding where his allegiances should lie.
Right.
And at the same time, you want to help the kid that's been bullied.
Right.
And you want to see the bullied kid punch everybody in the nose.
Right. Yep. Succeed.
Yeah, so it was a fun ride. There were the categorical humor did not get too extreme, which was pleasing. It stayed with some really good humor, a lot of fun, had a satisfying ending, which helped solidify who Bob Stone really was. And I like that. They resolved it without being heavy-handed, and you're like, oh, Bob.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And there were a couple of really enjoyable cameos. Jason Bateman is in it and Melissa McCarthy. And those are both really fun.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. It sounds like a good summer romp.
Yeah, and that's what I needed. I needed something that was just very distracting and just very silly that I didn't have to invest a lot in.
Right.
And I think they make a good pair. And if nobody has ever seen Dwayne Johnson on Lip Sync Battle.
Oh, my God. He's amazing.
That gives you an idea of what, to me, he's a good entertainer.
Right, yeah. Well, and that's, I was actually thinking about that for Kevin Hart, too. I don't know if he's been on Lip Sync Battle, to be honest, but he did a bit with Jimmy Fallon because he's afraid of heights.
Oh.
And they took him on a roller coaster.
Oh, that's mean.
Well, yeah, but
but
you know, he agreed to it, so it's kind of like people who go on reality shows and get beat up. Like you know what you're getting into. But what he didn't know, and well, here's another spoiler for you, is so they finish the ride and they finish filming it, and they immediately just launch him back into it again. So after that, he didn't know.
Yeah.
But I appreciate one of the things I think that Jimmy Fallon's Tonight Show has done has brought out a certain amount of humanity in our stars, because I love the people who go on who are so willing to make fun of themselves or to do something outrageous and crazy because it adds to their character. Mm-hmm. So I just appreciated that of him, that he was willing to be put in that position on camera. Said a lot about who he was.
Yeah. He's just really enjoyable. I went back and rented Ride Along just because
yeah.
of him. It's like I just want to watch him do his thing because he's so funny. So anyway, Central Intelligence, I think it gets a very safe thumbs up. It's just like you said, it's a good romp. It's perfect for the summer, and especially considering the real summer blockbusters that are getting ready to come out. And
That we're about to hit serious summer.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a good appetite.
Again, a palate cleanser, mm-hmm. like I said, for Christopher Moore. Set you up for the rest of the summer.
But we also are talking about those times that we're either crashing on the couch or flying on the plane, and suggesting some streaming recommendations for either, you know, binging or downloading or whatever. Now, do you have any recommendations for streaming this week?
I do. I have a recommendation for some fun summer cooking show stuff.
Oh, great idea.
I love Cutthroat Kitchen.
Ah.
And they just released 2 new seasons on Netflix about a month ago, which I've already binged them completely. It's really not a learn to cook show. It's much more about the competition and about how mean they can be to each other and really the, you know, diabolical auction items that they come up with for the show. Have you watched it? Have you seen it?
I have only seen little bits and pieces of it, but yeah, I know what you're talking about with the auction items.
Yeah, basically they're given, you know, a meal to make or a dish to make. Are given 1 minute to shop, to pick out everything that they need for that, and then they go into this bidding war against each other where they have, is it $25,000? They have $25,000 mm-hmm. each, and then they have money to bid on different sabotages that they can place on each other. And they range from you can't use salt, to you can't taste your food, to you have to cook in a mini kid's kitchen with a kid's, you know, skillet, and... Lord. You know, they just get crazier. Those are actually pretty mild ones, I think, from the first season that I watched. Some of them got really outrageous. But what was great about the seasons that just came out, or the most recent season, was that the judges who come down and have to judge these meals that they make after they have all these sabotages, they have an episode where the judges are the contestants.
Yeah.
Yes. And it was... fantastic. Beautiful. I mean, it was just beautiful. And one of Simon Munjabe, who's one of the harshest judges and will hold like really high standards for these guys, just looked sincerely at the, you know, producer that he was talking to and said, "This is a lot harder than I thought it was."
Well.
And you're like, yeah. And he got booted out in the first thing. And they're raising money for charity. It was really that really made it very worthwhile that season, because I was watching it and I'm like, this is insane. And then they have to judge their dishes. They had like restaurant people who ran whatever kind of restaurant the dish was coming from. Come and judge them. Ooh, so like an expert in the field from an LA restaurant came to judge their cooking. So it definitely, if you like that show at all, it's worthwhile to see that one just to see them squirm.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's always great.
Yeah, it was pretty fun. Yeah. So do you have a recommendation?
Yeah, and actually you reminded me of one. I just could follow up. Now, do you have Netflix?
Yes.
Have you ever seen The Chef's Table?
I don't think I have.
That's more documentary-like, and they interview Michelin star chefs and go through their history of how they got to where they were at, where they studied, and what their standards are and what their philosophy is. And it's just mouth-watering. It's just it's beautiful and elegant, and it's well-filmed, and it's I think each one runs just under an hour. They're good investments of time, but beautiful stuff. But actually, my recommendation, I'm actually binging Doctor Who.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, they finally got, well, I got behind on Doctor Who Smith, and so I caught up. I wanted to definitely see the last season of Matt Smith's because I wanted to know what the transition was.
Right.
And so we are just now getting into Peter Capaldi's first season. And
cool.
We're blazing through that. It's usually our nightly episode. We'll get through that probably by the end of summer. And isn't it fascinating? Did you watch any of the Doctor Who's with Matt Smith?
I have not watched a season, no. I can't remember where I left off. I'm very behind on Doctor Who, like very behind. So I haven't watched current at all. But
I think it's fascinating the way that show is done. It seems to me to be almost completely unique in its long run of having different actors play that lead character.
Yeah, I don't think anybody else has pulled that off in any way. If you look at X-Files trying to do a similar thing, but I mean, they built it into the story, which helped, but
the I know when Matt Smith took over, I didn't like him. Mm. I just didn't like him. I didn't like anything about him. I was like, this is not Doctor Who. I don't know what they're doing, but this is not the way that I understand Doctor Who.
Right.
Well, by the end of it, I liked him.
Mm.
And I think each of these characters, and now I can't stand Peter Capaldi.
So now you flipped.
Yeah. And I think there's something behind that because obviously to me, they're playing a very complicated story by picking Peter Capaldi to play the Doctor. Mm-hmm. And it definitely plays off of Matt Smith's exit.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think he's supposed to be particularly likable right now.
Right.
And so it'll be interesting to see how, by the end of Capaldi's run, how I feel about him. But, I remember it. They're diametrically opposed. Matt Smith, I didn't think I was ever going to watch it again.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting that you could have such a turnaround.
Yeah.
That's pretty dramatic change.
Well, and the companions have helped a lot. The companions have been stellar. I mean, just absolutely stellar. They're wonderful. I mean, it's like, okay, you can switch a doctor. Just don't lose the companion.
Right. Well, that shows for good writing. That shows for good writing. Because that means the consistency in the stories is enough to keep you going. And good direction, too.
Yeah.
And keep it going back. Yeah. Thanks for joining us for our summer series. We'll continue through August. Next month, a few of the movies we might choose from are The BFG, The Secret Life of Pets, Ghostbusters, and Star Trek Beyond. Yeah, I know. I'm looking forward to that one.
I'm
going to
see
always.
All. I'm going to see all those.
Yeah, you just movies.
Yeah, and have you seen Bad Moms trailer?
I've seen the trailer. Oh, yes, yeah. I have to admit, I'm kind of loving that one.
I just think that there's just going to be a lot of secret love for that.
Yeah, I have a feeling too. A cult. I smell a cult classic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we are the Geek Embassy. I'm Rhonda Oglesby, the Wild Card Ambassador, telling you, have multipass, we'll travel.
And I'm Regina McMenemy, Lead Ambassador for the Geek Embassy. You can find our podcast episodes and hangouts on iTunes, Stitcher, and our podcast host, Podbean. We're also part of the All Games Network. You should definitely check them out, allgames.com. And you can find all our links at thegeekembassy.com for this show and to see all kinds of new and exciting content we have up on the site, several new writers, a couple more coming on in the next couple of weeks. Keep an eye out for their posts. If you haven't heard me talking about it in other locations, I am currently taking pre-orders for my book, Mothering the Game. Go out and order, please, as soon as you possibly can, and help me make one of my lifelong dreams come true.
Yep.
To actually get that book out there. Many, many thanks to our fantastic editor, Ryan Broom, for all his hard work helping us out here at Desert Tree Media, and our faithful listeners and community. You guys are the ones we do all this for. Thanks for listening, and until next time, get your geek on!